Okay.
Oh, yeah. Could, Neil said it could have been a cell phone communication also.
How did you...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt your train
of thought. No, that's it. I have a lot of the emails, and I still have everything here, and I was went through just to see what I had here in emails from those people at that time to see what they were saying. I'm trying to bring them up here. But it was the following Sunday. We left about 4 o'clock with one of those heavy mallets, like a 5 or 10 pound mallet, handgun. What else?
Lock cutters.
Pole cutters, cages and carriers.
Wow.
And set
some
off
hardware.
Set off like true thieves would.
Wow, that is it's just hard to imagine. It's been so long, but it seems like only yesterday in your mind. So you set out amongst all this chaos. With a lot of hardware, and I guess you got emails about people that had birds that needed to be rescued. How did you know where all these birds were, and how did you actually bring all these people together to go out there and save all these parrots?
Well, it went through 911 Parrot Alert on Yahoo Groups. We were, and still are, sort of well-known out there for our lost and found work. And the people knew that I lived in Baton Rouge. So they, through 911 Parrot Alert at Yahoo, that's how they contacted us, emails. You know, asking if it was possible for us to go into the city to pick up their birds, which we did.
How did you get into the city? Was the city flooded? What kind of equipment did you use to get in there? And what did you encounter when you got in there? Tell us about what it was like trying to find all these birds and organize all these people once you were in the city.
Well, all these people came, it was like, I think, approximately 65 volunteers that came. But they were staggered. They all didn't come at one time. I think the first ones that showed up were Larry and Nell Knapp mm-hmm. from Michigan. And they came down, and once they got here, we were like stormtroopers. There was no stopping us.
One thing I'd like to add in there is I remember this is before the volunteer showed up, when Mom and I first went to get into the city, we were driving down, and we had as I said, we got the addresses, we had the stuff in the back, we were driving down to New Orleans. Now, at that point, they were stopping people on the interstates and the highways. The police officer was literally asking people, what are you doing? Why are you coming through? So here come me and my mom, you know, with all this stuff. We're driving up there, and this police officer stops us and says, why are you heading, why are you going into the city? So we look at them and we say, we're going to rescue birds. Now, I don't know what was going through that police officer's mind when, you know, to have us pull up with some cages, some pillowcases. And we said, we're going to rescue animals.
Cages and pillowcases. Let me, can I interject there? That was another thought I'm having, because I'm kind of trying to follow you along this journey. And visualize how you did this. You said cages and pillowcases. That's another thing that I wanted to ask you about is what kind of equipment did you have and all these people to bring these birds into, you know, safe sanctuary?
Well, first we went down. We had some carriers and cages the first night we went down. And we had specific addresses we were going to. It in itself was a nightmare because all the electricity was out. We didn't know where we were going. There were a lot of, hardly the street signs were all gone. No electricity. You know, like 100-year-old trees across the roads. So we had to battle our way through that. The first place we went to was an apartment building, and they said their birds were up on the second floor. So we went up there with a carrier and broke the lock, beat the door in with the mallet, went in and found the birds and took them. The reason we had a pillowcase were because lots of times, you know, just in case we came across more birds than carriers, we could put the birds in the pillowcases. Birds feel safe in pillowcases.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, Donna, all I can say is wow. This is such an amazing effort that you guys went through, and I'm sure you did whatever you thought you had to do to bring these birds into a safe place where they can survive and recover. This is just so awesome. So, are you telling me that that did most of this once you're in the city? Had the storm already passed by, and then you were kind of going door to door rescuing birds?
That's kind of how it went. See, I'm just trying to look up now. Things weren't so bad until the levee broke. And the levee breaking is what caused, and the pumps not working is really what caused everything to be inundated with water.
Now, we were on the outskirts. We weren't directly, we did get access to go into where the water was a little bit later. But at first, just my mom and I, we were more around, we were more on the outskirts area that had a lot of the day. I know we did a good bit of stuff in the West Bank. And
we were behind the airport. I remember going in there because you could see the Black Hawk helicopters, and they were just sort of hovering in the air with their lights on.
Wow, this is almost like a Hollywood movie, but a real situation. Just amazing. And how long, Donna, were you and Neil and all these people in the city working to get these birds out of the city?
Morning, we'd go in before dawn, and we would be out, you know, after the sunset.
And what do you mean by after sunset? Where did you go? Was there some place that, like a base camp or something, that you kind of backed up to at night?
No, our base camp was our vehicle. We Larry and Nell Knapp showed up. And I, you know, that had to be probably almost 2 weeks into the hurricane. When they came with cages and other supplies.
Gas.
Gasoline, that's right. You could hardly find gasoline. And then we would go out, probably leave here about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because we had rescued birds here. And in the mornings, we'd have to clean those cages, take care of those birds. Then we would leave, go into the city, go to these, find our way to these various addresses, and get these birds. Lots of times, by the time we got home, it was 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. We'd get a little sleep, up again the next day, feed the birds, and that's sort of how it went for a couple of weeks. Then the other volunteers started to come in.
I'd have to say at the beginning, when it was just, you know, a couple people, you know, like 4 people, we were probably more running off of adrenaline than anything else.
Not much food, huh?
Well, whenever I say, I mean, we have food. It's just you were going constantly. You'd
right,
get up, there were birds that, you know, we had the 40 birds that our friend had evacuated. Then we were going in and we were pulling out birds.
Right.
You know.
So you were just running on your own steam to get as many birds out as you can.
Because our house at that point started to, I don't think we realized what we were in for whenever we started this. Because, you know, we had our garage, at first, because we used to park a car in the garage. So whenever our friend evacuated the birds to us, we started putting birds in the garage. Under the carport.
Of course.
Then we went to, you know, after that started getting filled up, we had, they started coming into the house, into the pool room.
In the house?
The dining room. Yeah, we started filling them up into the house. You know, wow. Into the dining room that we were starting to put cages everywhere with birds. And then into the living room, into the pool room. Into the kitchen. We literally had birds by the end of this everywhere in the house.
How many would you say by time your house was full, how many birds did you have in there?
Over 300.
In your house? And
I don't think they were all here at the same time because people knew we had some of the birds that we had pulled out, so they came and picked up some of them. But overall, we had over 300 birds, but they were not all here at the same time. You know, it's like the volunteers. The volunteers would come in, two and three, three and four. At one point, we had like 10 volunteers here from various parts. They also came in from Canada. We had, we had the, under the carport, we had birds out there. We, you know, we set up planks and concrete blocks. We had parrots out there. Then when they went into the dining room, sort of like on the dining room table, then we sort of expanded into the living room. Then when all this was going on, we had the volunteers were coming in, and then supplies.
By the truckloads.
By the truckloads. Every time the UPS truck went, or
pallets.
The delivery trucks went down the street. They were stopping here. We just couldn't keep the front entrance open because of all the donations we were getting.
How were the donations coming in? Who was bringing them?
We had to go. A lot of the times, go down to this UPS store and pick them up down there. Called us and said, "You need to come pick these up. They've got everything blocked up down here." We had donations coming by the mail. We had Rick Jordan came in from AFA with a truck. I guess he came from Texas, and he had donations. So, you know, all that went there. Everything was everywhere. We had the den was set up. One part of it was sort of like something for budgies. Then down the hallway was this is a four-bedroom home. Down the hallway, we sort of was called Lovebird Alley.
Yeah, Lovebird Lane.
Lovebird Lane.
Agape Lovebirds.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, we had to set up the living room and dining room as a hospital unit because a lot of these birds were on medication. We had vets that came through the house. You'd mentioned before, Julie Burge came three times. We had Fern Van Sant that came in from California. Fern was here a couple of times. Dr. Greg Rich, he from New Orleans, evacuated from New Orleans into Florida. But when he came back, he would come over here, and then eventually he made weekly rounds. And we had vets from Texas that came.
Mm-hmm. You had UPS delivering food and supplies and veterinarians coming in on a regular basis to look at and care for these birds.
And that's not counting the volunteers. At one point we were sending out three search teams a day into New Orleans. They would go and they had addresses where some of the birds were, but they would go and meet with the Friends group or down the Mutt Shack group. And when they knew that 911 parrot alert was in there, so a lot of people would bring the parrots to somewhat of a staging area. And then our people would go to the staging area and pick them up and then bring them back to Baton Rouge.
So you were coordinating a lot of this over the internet?
A lot of it was done through Over the internet, yes.
And telephone.
And telephone. You know, when the people were coming in and we had to go pick them up at the airport.
We designed a lot of forms, because I know that was one thing Mom and I were looking at whenever this started. We said, you know, we're going in, we're picking up these birds. I said, we need to design these sheets that would have the ad. Like, if someone would go into, if you go into this house and you rescued this bird, we would get the address of where it was from, who the contact person was, who the person went, you know, who on the rescue team that we had was over there, you know, additional information. So we'd have to keep track of all of this like that, in literally on paper, just we'd fill it out, and we've still got this big book here of all where birds came from, information about them. We'd tag the cages so that way, you know, we could keep track of who was with who. And that's how I think a lot of our success from the rescue came, is that at the beginning we kept these detailed notes of everything. So whenever it came time to return the birds back to their owners, you know, we knew the addresses, we had phone numbers, you know, we were able to just start going, you know, start contacting people.
Well, I have to say, though, at first when they came in, we, as Neil previously said, we weren't expecting as many birds as we had. So when they were sort of in the dining room, on the dining room table, I knew where everyone came from. When more volunteers came and more birds came in, then we had to devise that system of tags. Cages had to be tagged. Pictures had to be taken. And that's where Julie and a girl, Charlotte, spent a lot of time with doing that, just to make sure that we knew where the birds came from. Many of the birds did not have an owner. Some of them, they had addresses, but there was sort of no owner name. They would say, we pull this from like 123 ABC Street. A lot of these houses, though, were rental properties. So
right.
It was a nightmare a lot of the times to try to find the owners of these birds. We did have the ones that we rescued, we had some of them, we had addresses on, and a lot of these people were not even allowed to come back. I think it was like 30 or 40 days after the storm hit that before anyone was allowed to go into the city. There was, you know, you could move around the outskirts off the city. It was sort of downtown. The Ninth Ward was all flooded in 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 feet of water. People would get on the overpasses, and boats would go from there.
Wow! Did you also have to kind of boat in to some of these places to get these birds?
We didn't. We didn't have a boat to use, and my boats were probably as scarce as hen's teeth at that time. We did have one incident is that someone had an aviary with a lot. I think it was sort of like, I want to say 80 parrots in it. And his name was Roy Bourgeois, and his story of evacuation was, you talk about your two boxes of Kleenex, it was really extraordinary. The water came up in their house in a matter of 5 minutes, and
already reaching for the Kleenex, Donna, I'm telling you. This is an amazing story. Just let me kind of interject here. All of these bird stories are beautiful, and I had Gayla Haskell on recently, and she was making me cry. And this has got me getting there, because not just, you know, the birds are beautiful, they're living creatures, but people like you are beautiful people that, yeah, reach out and use what you have of your own resources and your own energy and your own heart intentions to be super people when animals are in distress, when people are in distress. I know there were a lot of people in distress, and there was a lot of people out there rescuing people, Casey Bird Whisperer International are about pet birds and the enjoyment of pet birds. And I just want to say, you know, God bless you. I'm almost on the Kleenex right now. Please continue.
Well, you know, I was starting to say about this aviary owned by Roy Bourgeois, and they had to leave. The water came up within.
The water was rising. Parrots were about to die. Stay tuned for part three of the Great Parrot Rescue with Donna Powell and Neil of 911 Parrot Alert after this message from our sponsor.
Brothers Pets carries a full line of animals, tropical and saltwater fish, reptiles, exotic birds, and all the supplies to maintain them. Brothers Pets care about their customers and the pets they sell. The people at Brothers Pets work hard every day to bring you not only the best products, but also the best service. Brothers Pets staff has well over 100 years combined experience in animal husbandry and care. Brothers Pets welcomes special orders and do the best to meet all of your pet needs. Brothers Fish and Pets has become one of the largest independent pet stores in the Midwest thanks to their loyal customers for almost 40 years.
Welcome back to Bird Talk Live Online with your host Mike Kiger. Presentation of KC Bird Whisperer International. We're continuing with the part three of the Great Parrot Rescue in the Bayou of Louisiana after Katrina. Please join us for part three with Donna Powell and Neil of 911 Parrot Alert.